Bitches.
Sup, doodle bitches.
Welcome to another episode of Art and Labor, the podcast about art and labor.
Oh, did you see that Adam sent us a picture of what it looks like for the art workers to unite?
Holy schnizboos.
In our Instagram DMs.
Holy schnoopy poop. Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. Look at the
art workers of the world uniting picture provided.
Oh my god. It looks like to the folks at home, we'll post this, right?
Yeah, I'll post it in a story.
Yeah, we got the art workers of the world united, and it looks like happy chaos. And also there's someone being stabbed on the ground, but I assume that they're in a employer.
Yeah, I assume they are a landlord or something like that. And there's a part two. Yeah, yeah, workers, great. Engaging workers activated, minus one boss. It's like an RPG battle.
Yeah.
And they've
engulfed in flames already.
The boss is weak to fire, and they figured that out early on.
Sick. Well, so we got it going. We have one example of what it looks like for art workers of the world to unite. And we are still looking for more. We will talk Well, yeah, what's the handle? How do we get people to look at this artwork?
Adam's Instagram handle is Tim Ta Da Brookie. So it's Tim TADABRUCKI.
Sick. So y'all can check that out.
Follow Adam on Instagram only. He's off Twitter forever.
Yeah.
He told me.
Canceled?
Yeah.
Twitter is canceled. Not Adam.
I hope one day.
Yeah, that's true.
Let us pray.
Maybe it will be canceled. It sounds like everything's getting a little tumultuous there.
Oh, it's a weird zone, Twitter, huh?
Yeah, I guess, you know, just because, like, the whiz kids who made it sound like they're off the rails.
I don't fucking know. Why anybody? I don't understand it. It's like, yeah, just shout into the void and everybody in the world is on this one message board. I don't know. I like my highly curated timeline. It's fun, but I don't know. It seems like a fucking mess. I don't know. I'm exhausted. I'm sick. I threw up.
Oh, nuts.
I'm all right, though. Well, I feel weird.
We'll take it easy. You know, stay cool. You've got your Gatorade.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just trying to not throw up. I don't think I'm going to throw up again. I just feel weird.
Yeah. That's okay. This is one of the podcasting experiences where we give a lot of ourselves.
You know, yeah, come in sick for you guys, because it matters to get these in every week. It does. To me, it does. It matters.
Yeah, we're trying to stay consistent. And it matters to me. I just start to feel weird if I...
No, if we miss a week, it's weird. I think we did it once because I was in Japan, and it's weird.
It's weird. It's like, oh no, what's happening to the news? Like, I felt a little bit sad that we didn't, you know, get on top of all the crazy Whitney stuff that's been going on. But we still can, because the Whitney biennial is still up and the debates are still raging. What should institutions do to become more... I don't know, less bloody.
Yeah, and it's not from a lack of thinking about it on our part. I know we've been following it and went to the Whitney Town Hall. I think we talked about that a little bit when that happened a couple months ago. I don't really remember when that was. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I know that, like, Decolonize This Place has been doing the Whitney lobby protests for, I think, like, the past couple months. Yeah, I think they were, like, doing 7 or 9 weeks.
And it's not just them. It's also hosted by this group called Dirt, which is... what is it? It's like decolonial research it's something. Yeah, fuck, I can't. It's a weird acronym.
Institute.
I actually interviewed one of the people who run it, and
that'll be on.
That'll be tacked on to the end of this episode. It's just like 10 minutes, and that was outside of the most recent protest they did, which was billed as a museum worker solidarity day.
Right.
And they did a big banner drop.
And Nicole Eisman made a bunch of really cool stickers of spray cans.
Yeah, they're like inspired by Garbage Pail Kids. I posted that on our Instagram when that happened, so folks might have seen that. But yeah, that was kind of a funny story because I got there. I just went after work just to check it out because me and Lucia went to the museum worker happy hour.
Oh yeah, we were hanging with all of the museum workers collectively who are interested in workers' rights,
and that was like a neat event. And you know, a lot of those same folks I knew were going to be at this, so I wanted to follow up with some of them and just say hi or whatever. I mean, it's nice to be in a protest. It feels cathartic and nice to yell at rich people, especially I wasn't here for this part, but later in the protests they actually like marched to Warren Canders' house.
Yeah, that was the big news.
That was like,
I liked who was it, Brian Butcher wrote a piece about the march.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, it was chill. Read about it because I didn't feel like going, and then I researched Warren Canders back through to the 90s, and then I checked up on some other stuff, and I wrote a piece, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah. Sorry for not making it to the march. I did some deep dive, per usual.
You're deep diving. What was it? You're the brain smarts, I'm the street smarts.
Yeah, you killer street smarts.
of the podcast. I think we've discovered that off mic, but now you guys know the secret of this show.
Can I hit you with some deep dive notes?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so right now everyone is going to the Whitney, right? They're like, Warren Canders, you're involved in genocide. This is awful. And it's like, okay, who is this guy? And why are they protesting him now? Because he's been spending decades in this line of business. So, like, how much has he been protested before? When did he get on the board of the Whitney? What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
Right? So this guy, and, you know, I think a lot of people have been criticizing also the board of trustees and saying, like, he's not the only one with, like, you know, blood on his hands.
Yeah, which in Dirt's zine that they gave out during the protest, it was basically a fake Whitney guide.
Right.
With all the information, and it had a breakdown of all the board members and how they're all really bad.
They all, yeah, folks, money is pretty rotten, you know? And so that being said,
yeah,
this is something like we should take as a square one. Like, money is pretty rotten. There's a ton of Republicans out there.
Yeah.
And they're funding art.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, you know, liberal money, and it's all the same thing. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we've pulled back the veil.
Yeah.
Now
everyone knows. Everyone already knew.
Yo, folks, you gotta be screwy to make that much money. But, like, okay, so Warren Canders got on the board in 2006. This was, like, it was a really weird time because he was actually, like, getting into legal trouble with the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was, like, selling, like, faulty bulletproof vests to cops across the country, which everyone's like, suckers, like, that's all right. But then also to, like, UN peacekeepers. And that was where the hard line dropped of, like, wow, you're fucking with the international community.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, you know, there's this huge lawsuit that's mounting, and then Canders is like, oh shit, I should sell Safariland to this umbrella company for a while and dip out while this entire thing is going on. And just like, there was some weird stuff too, because he was like, I think involved in some weapons deals, like selling things to like people in Iraq. I think maybe, who knows on how many sides. He was right. Just like, woo, what if I just like fuck around and get like a $1 billion payday out of the whole thing and avoid all of my legal scandals and like then just jump onto the board of the Whitney all within the span of a couple of years. And then he sat on the board for a while, and then in 2012 he bought Safariland back after everything had settled down, and he was like, oop, looks like I can just like slip back into my place right here. And it's just sort of like, all right, that's what you're dealing with. That's like how your enemy operates.
Yeah, so even if you take this enemy down, he's just going to slither his way back in. And like, it's not...
Exactly.
It's like you chop off one head of the Hydra, it grows back, you know?
And that's why I didn't march. Because I spent some time thinking about what the fuck is going on. Okay, so there's that. That's one part. Okay, and then I was like, oh... Remember last year with Occupy Museums, or yeah, maybe it was 2 years ago now, Larry Fink on the board of the MoMA was receiving the same exact treatment. And I was like, okay, well, let's see what's going on there because, you know, okay, so, you know, Larry Fink, he is the CEO of BlackRock and he's like a Trump advisor and, you know, just an all around despicable dude like a lot of these people are. What is going on? What are these protests doing? The protests are, like, you know, there. They're visible. They're getting people's awareness up. They're making people focus on targets and understand more about, like, you know, the positions of these people. They're insane. So, but then I was like, oh, wow, he's still on the board. And also nobody's protesting him anymore. So it's like, okay, what are we fucking doing? Like, just throw in some stuff out there, see what sticks. If it doesn't work,
no,
go for another board
nice,
member.
Glossy like... pictures for my social practice portfolio. Lucia, come on.
Right.
I'm trying to get into grad school.
No, it's true.
I'm not trying to get under, it's a joke.
You're trying. So come on. We all are. We all want to be saved. No.
I'm one of the good ones.
Okay. And now.
Let me out of poverty.
Yeah. Yo, oh, hold on. Let me open the golden gates. Oh.
Yes. I'm free.
Yeah. It's just a little scroll. Just they throw it and it hits you in the head, and you're like, what do I do now? And they're like, pay us. How do you think this place stays so golden?
Oh my God. Well, I do think a lot of the people who are involved in this, the protests, do understand that.
I have one more.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other line of research I was doing in the same arena was with the David Rockefeller situation, which we covered the way that protests were happening in like 69, mm-hmm. 68, early 70s. A lot of people were occupying museums, and our earliest episodes were about the different art groups that were participating most fervently. But the protests against David Rockefeller were really central because that, you know, they're like, the Rockefeller family is funding weapons and like horrible Agent Orange shit in Vietnam. And it's sort of the same thing as what's going on with this Warren Kander situation. Did the Rockefellers get off the board? No. Did the Rockefellers get less broke? No. They just this year from the David Rockefeller Foundation donated $200 million to the MoMA, which is, I guess, the most money they've ever donated before. And there was a huge celebration.
And what happened to those artists who were involved in those protests against Rockefeller? Well, a couple of them did end up, you know, either in jail or on the run.
Right.
And are like little freaks and that's whatever. But
some of them are just in the museum,
too. A couple of them were just straight up absorbed into the museum.
Yeah. Which is great, like the way, you know, honestly, there's no ethical stance in these situations when it's really like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't, be in the museum or don't. Like, it doesn't, literally nothing changes. We're just in an arena of ideas here. Like, and that's what these institutions have always been for.
Yeah, they're kind of like staging for protests a lot of the times. Like, I think about the, you know, another thing that's we haven't really talked about on the podcast is the Extinction Rebellion stuff.
Oh, I love Extinction Rebellion. They're in the streets going nuts.
Yeah, they're totally nuts.
Everywhere. Oh my God, did you see the climate protests? Like, I was watching the Facebook live stream of all of the kids in Paris. Like, it was a few months ago, but they have this new protest technique where all of these kids run around in a circle and it looks like a human tornado.
Sick.
Yeah, it's like, yo, this is what you're going to get in the sky.
Just kids running around.
Yeah, but it does. It looks like, because it's like masses of people and then this like tornado shape like forms in the middle of them.
That's fucking nuts.
It rolls.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of those were like the big die-in took place at the museum. Of natural history.
Oh, yeah. The British Museum.
Yeah, the
Museum.
British one. Yeah.
They're so international.
You know, a lot of, I mean, I think it was Hito Strayal talked about, like, in one of her essays, talked about, like, the history of protests happening at museums.
Yeah.
I forget which one, but yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about doing it at the museum where maybe you'll actually get coverage and actually grow sympathetic support or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing, too, about, so, like, what's going on with the Sackler situation is really tricky, too, because what these institutions are doing that have said they're not going to take any more money from this family, like, I saw a weird little linguistic loophole okay. in what the Met was saying.
Yeah, what?
So they were like, we will not take any more money from the Sackler family members who are involved with pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
Sales.
Okay.
And I was like, huh. Interesting. The cool ones.
Yeah,
right?
So we'll take it from that weird, like, daughter-in-law who does, like, weird performance art or whatever the fuck. Did you see that?
Yes! Yes! Fuck!
That's so fucking bonkers. I hate New York.
Which is, like, the lamest pay-to-play bullshit. Like, that's so sad. It, like, pay-to-play works the best when you're rich.
Doing a Yoko Ono-style cut-up piece about how it's hard to be rich or whatever.
Aw, sweetheart. It's just that everybody's a good person.
Don't you think that even rich people can be good people?
Well, yeah, they can. Yeah, yes, actually, I will allow that. And, you know, but, you know, you have to do good things.
Yeah, I would say you'd have to be like the type of rich where like you're fine, but you're not like a ruling class. You're not like profiting off other people or something. Like, I'd say it's okay. You could be a good rich person if you've parted with enough of your wealth.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, it's like, all right, try me, you know? You want to be a good person? Just be a good person. Try it out. See what being good means.
Try it, baby.
Yeah, I mean,
I want to see your best shot.
Yeah, just give it a try.
But yeah, I wanted to kind of mention this Ills Within open letter a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Just, like, alert people to it if they hadn't seen it. Let me see. Was it officially signed? Oh, it's signed by the People's Cultural Plan. So, yeah, so the People's Cultural Plan, Artists of Color Block, these are groups that have been around since, like, there's a group called Arts and Labor Occupy Wall Street.
Oh, yeah.
So these are, like, folks who are probably double our age who have been involved in a lot of this stuff. And, in fact, I've met some of their friends who are, like, involved in, like, that really early, like, Chinatown Artists Coalition from like the early 80s. And
word.
They're just like really interesting people to talk to, and I'd love to get one of them on the show sometime. We were talking about it. I know one of them was really involved with the museum happy hour we went to and stuff. And
nice.
I think they're doing some
some
good thinking.
They're getting the information out to people in an accessible way, and they're talking about the ways that they want to see the institutions reformed.
Yeah. It's good. Should we read part of it?
Yeah.
Just a little bit of it.
We could do a little bit of reading.
We, as activists and cultural workers of New York, put our fragile communities first before any privately owned museum whose property and collections, we should add, are safeguarded by more financial investments, special security, and armament than any local food bank, homeless shelter, or worker immigration center. Museum architecture, white walls, glass, and light is perceptibly deceiving, as they are not as fragile, pure, and safe as founders or board members might want to persuade us otherwise. They should more aptly be compared to nation-state borders that were created to protect fortunes built on the forced labor extraction, dispossession of land, and cultural treasures. We, as activists who have a history of fighting against racism, sexism, military expansion, dispossession, and corruption, know from experience that safe spaces must be self-determined from the people they are meant to keep safe. Extending a welcoming, open hand while the other hand, hidden from sight, holds a tear gas canister, sends a twisted message, and is not the foundation for building a safe space.
This false sense of security and mutuality between the workers, the museum, and the public must be reconsidered and renegotiated, especially from the perspective of communities of color who have had a history of labor inequality and underrepresentation in the museums of New York. It has often been a misconception that museums' founding statements are the reason why they are desegregated. To that point, it would be a mistake to overlook the efforts of artists and cultural workers of color who have fought to desegregate museums and create more inclusive and safe cultural spaces for communities of color. We urge all senior and executive staff to step back and listen for once to those who have lived experiences, especially those whose families have been divided by the colonial U.S.-Mexican border and who live under constant physical and mental oppression from national, state, and private forces backed by race nationalistic rhetoric and ideology.
To the workers who have come forward, we, those currently in the struggle, and the legacy of artists, activists, and cultural workers of color are behind you till the very end. It is true that in the museums of New York, we have seen an increase of exhibitions focused on Black, Brown, Yellow, and Red power. We have seen the rearranging of their collections to bury the colonial narratives in an effort to remain relevant to a new generation of visitors. We have seen a marginal increase in curators of color, or have we? We have seen museums invite consultants of color into their museums to strengthen their community relationships. And to their credit, we have seen them invite the angry folks in for negotiations and mediation. While all this might seem like there have been a few steps forward, time and time again, cultural institutions continue to take many steps back. The ethical contradictions and internal conflict, as revealed by the current situation at the Whitney and comparatively in all other institutions in New York, remain inside these walls. Simply championing challenging art has reached its limits, and we are now at a critical point where we concrete and direct actions on all fronts, inside and out, and in all levels of the institution, from staff to the highest positions within these museums. It is the only way forward. Do you want to do the rest?
Sure. If cultural institutions indeed intend to be leaders of change in our city, then the onus is on them to work together with the workers and community to create ethical guidelines for all their operations. This is the perfect time for this coalition and direct action, as the 33 city-owned cultural institutions are currently creating institutional diversity, equity, and inclusion plans. This and more should be explored and expanded within all private and nonprofit cultural institutions who receive money from the New York City of which the Whitney Museum received cultural capital funding upwards of $51.9 million, and special assistance from the Department of Cultural Affairs. To be clear, we are not calling upon you to right the ills of an unjust world. We are calling upon you to right the ills within your ranks. You know, I think this is, it's good. It's good and interesting and important to, like, target a place where wealth disparity is so obvious. But I'm also, like, really, really on this tip of, oh, that's right, if there was full communism, then we could just, like, have art.
Hell yeah. I mean, and that's what's weird about it. It's like I was going to tell a story before about the Nicole Eiserman stickers.
Yeah.
It's like everybody, like, so when I got there, it was like just two people handing out those stickers. And I'm like, oh, I wonder where the protest is. And they're like, oh, yeah, we don't really know either. And I was like, oh, you're handing out these stickers. I was like, did you make them? And one of the people were like, oh, yeah, I'm her studio manager. And the other person was like, no, I didn't make them. And I was like, so are you guys getting paid hourly to give these out? And the one guy was like, oh, actually, I gotta go, but they're getting paid hourly. So the other person who's getting paid hourly to hand out these
protest stickers.
Protest stickers.
Yeah, and then, dude, it's a paid protest.
Yeah, and then, but then also, like, when people noticed, like, oh, I know that artist. I want one. Like, it's like an art object, and it's very...
Yeah, it's collectible. Weird. It's collectible, and it's, like, really nicely made.
They look exactly like Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
Also, okay, so I did go to the biennial.
Oh, you did? Because I did not. I just left before.
See, and that's where I really want to have this discussion because I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, I want to go to the biennial and I want to see what people think is like the next batch of new American art.
I felt like I didn't want to go in. I was just like, I don't have time. I have to go.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Yeah. It's like, you know, so this is like the dichotomy that is forming around these institutions is evident within the works that are on display in the show. And like, I watched the video, the Triple Chaser, the video from Forensic Architecture.
Oh, okay.
Which is like a group of like activist artists, documentarians that they come from London, and I think like a bunch of them work at Goldsmiths. And they, which it's funny because it's like, okay, so here's this new American art from London.
From London, yeah.
But it's just them criticizing our capitalist structure, which also I'm like, folks, it's, London is to blame as far as I'm concerned. You guys, come on. I mean, you guys screwed us.
You're the original sin here.
Yeah. Yeah. Get it away. So, you know, the video was incredibly straightforward, well-researched, visually stimulating. There was lots of, like, it was, like, a really good how to make an AI that is able to, like, discover objects in natural settings. And, like, they go through the process of, like, finding all the canisters of the tear gas and, like, photographing them and then, like, turning them around and, like, finding all the different languages that they're printed in so that they can, like, fully document every place they've been used by, like, having programs just, like, consistently run. Mm. And then, like, and then it got a little bit awkward because it was like, oh, look, here's, like, a guy getting shot in the leg and it's, like, and it's a war zone, but it shouldn't be. And it was like, oh, God, this is just very straightforwardly, like, a guy getting shot in the leg. And you're, like, I get, like, I'm supposed to feel really bad now and, like, scared and, like, oh, no, I'm in the house of the devil, and, like, Warren Canders is on the board here, and he's watching me or something. He's watching me watch this video. Like, I don't know. But then the rest of the art was, like, it was, like, ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Because that was so clearly the focal point of the show, and the theater was, like, constantly filled because it was a 10-minute video, so people were just like, oh, I can take in this whole, like, knowledge set, and it's not, like, you know.
Yeah, it's not like crushing, like, what's the word, like too long, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just, it was like a nice bite of horror.
Yeah.
But it was also like, you know, dubbed by David Byrne, and he was like, hey, I'm your nice, cool musician dad, and I just want to tell you about tear gas.
When I was young, you could get a one-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, and the sink didn't work, and you were happy, and...
yeah, that fucker. He's like, and now I want everyone to leave New York City because it's dead. It's people, dead. I love Detroit, but I'll never move there myself.
It's like my fucking mom. My mom is always like, oh, did you move to Detroit? All the artists are moving to Detroit. No! I'm like, mom, that's the problem. What are you talking about?
Get out of here.
Stop it.
And that's, and so like, that's tied in too. It's like, okay, artists are expected to be like the people who fix up your neighborhoods. Artists are expected to be the people who fix up your communities. Artists are expected to now be investigative journalists. Like, and then when you try to look at other forms of art that are going on, it's like, oh, that's a subdued, formal experiment with different materials. And this person is like exploring their identity. And it's like, where, you know, like, I can't even look at this because there's this other thing going on with all these protesters and all of this, like, crazy CEO shit. And it's like, is this what art is going to be now? Yeah, like,
it's either something, like, so self-indulgent or something that's, like, so insipid that it's just like, what why are we doing this?
Yeah. It was, like, so insular and coded that I'm like, okay, I guess, like... There was this one piece that everyone was talking about that was like a blue tarp that was, it was supposed to be like a FEMA tarp or whatever, but it was like draped like a shroud on like a stick, and there's like some like pebbles or some shit. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I'm culturally insensitive, but everyone is like, oh, it's the Santa Maria, and like, oh, it's like, oh, it's so enigmatic and powerful. And I'm like, I just saw somebody get shot in the leg. Like, what? I'm, like, weirded out. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It's like... I guess there's some sheltered liberal who needs to see that or something, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was, yeah. But then the Nicole Eisenman sculptures are, like, out in the balcony.
Yeah.
And they're, like... a pretty good relief, actually.
Sure, it's good.
It's yeah it's pretty good. There's like a giant human just farting into the sky.
Wow.
Just huge
growth shit.
Clouds of gaseous farts. Just
and is it Warren Cantor's?
I bet it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
The gas,
got him.
Folks. Ooh. It's the gas show.
Oh, my God.
And then, but and then it's really funny, too. Okay, here's the three-parter.
Okay.
Brian Bellot.
Okay.
Made an installation of a puff piece, which is a box fan inside of a painting that's, like, airing the room out.
Okay.
So, you get it? You get it? There's farts and there's fans.
Okay.
And there's a big protest about gas.
All right. Just air that out with the painting or whatever. I don't...
The artist's statement is good too. But this is what we're dealing with here. Yeah. It's insane. It's a bunch of insanity, and, like, nobody is actually, like, looking at the other side of it. Like, what are we doing here?
I don't know. I think I mentioned on the podcast when I went to the, like, town hall, I was, like, I was pretty critical at the town hall. I was, like, maybe we shouldn't be targeting the free days when it's just, like, people who can't afford... go to the museum are going to the museum. maybe we should target the member days.
Yeah.
Like the special member hours or like the openings where there's actual like ruling class and rich people like there. I don't know. Just spitballing.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's I mean, that's like the whole thing here.
That's
it's,
what I loved about the MoMA gala picket.
Yeah.
That was, I thought was great.
Just get right into everybody's face.
They all have to go to that gala every year.
You know? They have to. Otherwise, they get their membership revoked. You're not rich anymore. Sorry.
Yeah. What do I know? I'm just a little nothing.
You're not nothing. You're a little podcaster.
Just a little run-in-my-mouth podcaster.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything either. I just know what I read, but it could be a lie as well. So,
but some of the points that we brought up in this, I bring up in the interview I did with one of the members of Dirt who were giving out the, like, fake Whitney guide with all this, like, research in it. And they also, like... It wasn't Decolonize's Place that put on that town hall. It was actually their group. And I think they're kind of not great at social media is a lot of the reason why I think that their group hasn't been getting a lot of write-ups or something. But I'll definitely link to it in our show notes and post about it. I don't think they have, like, a Twitter or Instagram.
Yeah.
They just have a website.
That's dear. We'll I like it. That about them.
Yeah, maybe that's for the best.
Yeah.
Maybe that means they're more concentrated.
I like you all. You're making, like, information, and then you're just, like, showing up to places.
Yeah, and they printed, like, you know, like, 300 of those and gave them out to all the people online and
I love
stuff.
Them.
Like, some people, like, these bewildered tourists who are just like, I don't know, I didn't want to pay $20, so I'm in line. It's like, aww. Well, here's why.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good job.
You know, like I think that was good. And so,
what's going on here, with the protests is like what we're doing here. We're like building some sort of consciousness around the way that these institutions are run and exposing the ways that inequality has affected the things that we're experiencing inside of the institutions. And I think that's great. But what we're doing now to, like, enact some kind of change might, like, need a more direct step. So just wondering if it's good to, like, think about, you know, making some demands on people or, like, possibly getting, like, more of a coalition together with people who are, like, affected on the museum staff and who are, you know, because there's, like, a separate world of people who are curating these shows and putting these shows together, and they're, like, they're, like, here is our representation of what is going on. And literally there are. It was, like, you know, the metrics for the show are superb. You know, the curators did their best to be like, there's X amount of people of every single color, there's X amount of age ranges, there's like all of these different identities, there's all of these different like income levels. They made.
I kind of love it because then people are like, they can't be like, well, there's your problem. It's that it's racist and that it's sexist. And it's like, well, that's two of the problems, but another of the problems is capitalism.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, and so that's what's going on now. It's like they did such a good job of being like, here's a representation of all of these different things. Don't add us. And we're also just two ladies who did it. So like, don't add us. And then like, there's all these people who are somehow like trying to still use that card or like, I don't really get where the disconnect is going, but it's like representation doesn't have any teeth anymore. Obviously people are like, okay, well, we're just gonna use our money to like get all of the crayons in the crayon box.
Dude, whatever gets people to last consciousness faster, like whatever, let them try it.
I mean,
by all means, try it. It's not gonna
solve
the problem, but try it.
I guess so. But if there was a way to, like, I mean, we can stay on the same wheel, you know? We can just be in this wheel. Like, that's a way you could just go through your whole life.
No, but my point is, how can the argument keep getting brought up over and over again? I mean, I guess it could just keep getting brought up over and over again.
Yeah, it's been getting brought up over and over again for, like, decades, for lifetimes. Like, the people who are, like, generations older than us are, like we're all saying this, you know, and it's like, all right, so we are at the level. Like, people know what's going on, but then I think something else is gonna have to change.
I agree.
I don't know what that is, but, like...
Ooh, I agree.
You know. I'm just spitballing here. I don't know.
I think everyone knows that is correct. I think it's just a matter of whatever strategy people are going. And like, I honestly think it doesn't help that it's just like continues to just get press, but the press, like, it's just basically covering the same political points over and over again. It's not actually like building pressure on anything. It's not actually, I think it's just like creating this like, yay, we got good press and the protest was successful. And it's just like, it didn't actually do anything. And I just want to see, like, you know, what to me, what I've seen actually do something to change these museums are the museum workers unionizing and the museum workers fighting and holding the institutions accountable. And I think that's what they're trying to harness in the most recent one, where it was supposed to be like Museum Worker Solidarity Day. But I don't think they did a good enough job actually reaching out to the groups organizing the museum workers to participate, because it just kind of ended up like the same protest it's been each time.
Right. And the thing is, like, there's like a whole show going on inside, and then outside is a whole nother show. And it's like, when are we going to be able to, like, connect these things? And also, when is it going to be cool just to, like, have an art show again? Are we going to, like, are we just going to go deeper into this? Is it just going to be, like, oh, sorry, no more art now, like the art strike? Like, you know, everyone was like, hey, we're having an art strike. Like, ooh, Trump was just elected and like J20 art strike time.
Oh, I thought you meant the 60s one, but
there was the 60s. Everyone is just like going off of the same playbook. And that's why I'm like, no, homies, like shit has got to change. Yeah. So there was like the 1960s art strikes where everyone was occupying museums. And then there's the J20 art strike.
Yes.
Much shorter lived, but also like, okay, we're going to go occupy museums now. And it's like, homies, like, please, it's hurting me. I mean, great, I love it when people are like out there en masse.
No, this is like an invitation. People should come talk it, like, we should talk this out. We should strategize, whether it's off mic or on mic. I think we should really seriously re-strategize if folks are interested in that.
Yeah, but the thing is, the art strike really is ramping up, because when we replace the artifact, like the art object, with just people protesting, that effectively is like the art strike people were attempting to create, like, too neatly.
Well, it's like, I wonder what was subverted first. Was protest subverted by art first, or was art subverted by protest first? Like the social practice, or the like just like kind of self-selecting, like, oh, I guess I have to do my art about this now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is, well, I think it, like, it's a combination of everyone coming to a similar place from different avenues. And, like, what we're seeing now is the possibility for people to lose focus on things that will enable them to make lateral realizations, like art does. Like, if art is a tool, in, you know, the one thing that it does really, really well is help people make connections that they weren't intending to.
Yeah.
like, metaphor is a beautiful experience. In your mind, you can get to places where you were not expecting
to
get to.
Dude, it's so cool. It's like folding a piece of paper and the two ends are touching suddenly.
What and then the fuck? You just tunnel right through. You can do it.
Art does that, and it's really cool.
But if we scrap those techniques, if we just, like, take poetry out of our lives and we just say, like, no, everything's got to be direct. Everything's got to have a message. We got to flood this institution with ourselves and our, like, chants and everything. Then it's, like, everything is really concrete and everything is just, like, it's, like, okay, well, you know, like, it's great. I love it. I love doing this. But I also protest things, like, you know, I'll go, you know, I don't know, been to Washington, been up and down the fucking avenues of Manhattan. I've been marching around Brooklyn.
And the prisoners.
I've marched recently. All over. Yeah, the prisoners in my neighborhood. Yeah. Fucking, you know, like, the protests happen and also everything is just sort of continuing on. And I'm just like, one thing that saves my soul and helps me to, like, understand where I am in the world is, like, having a quiet moment to look at a thing and think about the connections around me. And I'm just like, well, shit, if everybody's just yelling all the time, like, how are we gonna come to a new solution?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Because we know what the problem is. Like, if you are living on this planet, you know what your problem is. Like, you know when you can't get healthcare. You know when your housing is too expensive. Like, I know when I'm being fucked. And I need, like, a quiet moment sometimes to think my way out of my situation. And, like, art has always been that for me.
And you deserve it. And I do think everyone will enjoy this quick conversation I had with Megan from the deinstitutional research team.
Oh, yeah.
Dirt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think people will enjoy that because they, you know, they're a dedicated group, like, team who's, like, you know, actually trying to, like, collect the information around this and, you know, figure out a best strategy. And we talk about all of that directly at the protests at the Whitney. So
that's awesome.
I think you guys will enjoy that, and I'm going to get off mic before I throw up on it.
Don't throw up.
Thanks, Lucia.
Oh, feel better.
And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Let's have fun.
Hello, Art in Laborland. I am outside the Whitney at another Decolonize This Place and other group, Warren Cantor, anti-Warren Canders protest. This one is explicitly museum worker solidarity theme, so I thought it would be a good one for us to check out. I'm here with Megan, who's part of a new group that just launched. You want to tell the folks what it's called?
Sure. Our name is DIRT, but that stands for Deinstitutional Research Team.
That's really neat. So what does that entail exactly? Right now, I was looking at you giving out, like, their, like, fake Whitney guides, but it's just a bunch of really good information in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Our faux guides are meant to model the original ones. So last week we gave out about over 200 to museum visitors online and also planted them in the Whitney. The Whitney did find them and remove them very quickly. Yeah. But they are really just a guide to understanding for the person who may just be waiting in line to go see art, to understand why there are protesters outside the museum for the past 9 weeks. And so we explain, why is Warren Canders a focus? Why is labor, how is the Whitney tied to issues of labor, of land, of displacement? And so it's really just kind of a explanation for those who may not be initiated in the type of protest language that we're using.
I think that's really helpful for folks because, and I think that framing this around museum worker solidarity is also really important and building coalitions with a bunch of other groups, not just one group on one singular issue with Warren Canters. I think it's good to open it up to, like, a bunch of different issues at once. Like, there's so many problems with the way these museums conduct themselves. And oftentimes, like, it's the museum workers that get the brunt of the
the protests, but that's not the intention at all. It's just they're the ones who are actually working when the protests are happening, right?
Exactly. And it's the front of line people that are taking the brunt of all the protests. And just wanted to clarify that the Museum Worker Coalition block is here in support of DTP because they've been the ones who've been organizing all of these and bringing all of these over 30 coalition groups together. So this is just
so
another
great
group.
To hear.
Yeah. And this was the time for everyone to really come out. So this is why we made the call to museum workers to just say to Whitney workers, we're here, we see you, we feel your pain, and we want to change this for the better.
So wait, so when did DIRT start officially?
So DIRT officially started right after the January town hall held by DTP. And then
I didn't realize that was held by DTP.
Yes, so at Cooper Union.
Yeah, I was there, yeah.
And there were breakout groups. And then following that, DTP announced two organizing sessions, and we came about from those organizing sessions.
That's excellent.
Yeah, over 30 people expressed interest in research, and then we are a core group of 7 people who have been meeting every week for the past 3 months, putting all of this together.
Oh, that's really awesome. What are your social media handles? How can people find you guys?
So we are just online right now, just have a website. So it's d-irt.com.
Okay, I wanted to make sure we got that right in the middle of the chunk. Can you tell me more about some of the other groups that you guys invited? Are they going to speak today? Do you know a lot about the program today?
We don't know a lot about the program. I think DTP wants to announce on site, so we're not sure. That's also why the museum call to workers was a little bit vague, to show up and be supportive. And if there's a shout out to museum workers and cultural workers, to make some noise so that the Whitney workers know we're here.
That's really neat. I mean, I see all sorts of people. I saw Nicole Eisman giving out stickers.
Amazing stickers.
Right now there's, do you know this group that's right now putting up these black signs?
I don't know. And that's what's so wonderful about the build up over the 9 weeks is that groups are coming out, and because it really ties that the Whitney is not just about candors, it's not just about tear gas, but it's about so many other issues. In the American experience that the Whitney says that they really want to address, but really at the top they perpetuate the problems that we're trying to solve.
Right. If we actually want to take on these issues, it's a lot of systemic change that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And so, my fear with all this is always if Warren Cantors is removed, it'll just putter out. But it sounds like you guys are kind of prepared to have a much more comprehensive approach to this.
Exactly. And so Warren Canders is just the beginning. We want to make sure that someone just as bad doesn't fill his place. And so the intention of having this worker solidarity come together is that we'll have meetings and actually form focus groups and committees to really think about museum governance moving forward.
I think that's really great. In some of the most early episodes of our podcast, we go over the Art Workers Coalition in the 60s that started in Soho and started around criticizing museums in a really similar way, criticizing Rockefeller different board members of the MoMA who were involved in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really incumbent on us to learn from this people who have already done kind of exactly this in the 60s.
And carry on that legacy.
Yeah, and so they did this thing called the open hearing, which is kind of what this is reminding me of, where people were just sort of invited to give an idea of what do they want the museum to look like? What do they think an idealized museum is like? And I was wondering what your...
Ooh, well, my...
You don't have to speak for the group. Just
right,
yourself.
Yeah. I won't speak for the group, and I think that's where having many more voices will create something where we can really reimagine what the museum is. I think for me, what's most important is for people who say, where's the money going to come from? Mm-hmm. We don't have to work with the existing structure. We should work with something else and think about if the museum is for the community, let's involve the community voices. And there's another way to reimagine funding because there is money other places.
Absolutely. And anything else you want our listeners to know about? Maybe listeners not in New York, how they could get started on a similar project in a different city anything, suggestions like that?
So I think it's just great if we can create this kind of ripple effect across the states where everyone is looking to their institution and questioning them, because there was an article that came out about SF MoMA about how there isn't a lot of critique in a very progressive city.
All the people who are into stuff like that have all got pushed out of the city, you know?
Right, exactly. So if even just raising attention, even if it starts very small, then if museums across the country hear voices challenging them, it's going to be really difficult to not listen if the voices get louder and louder.
Yeah, I think challenging museums to critique capitalism as a whole is an interesting strategy, because I think it's like you're targeting the most sympathetic, maybe, and then maybe that'll ripple out. I mean, I see so many fucking cops here.
Yep, there are many, and so to think of how closely tied the Whitney is to you know, the people who are supposed to be defending the city, when it's the people of the city who are protesting, it's a very conflicting message.
Yeah, it's true. But it is heartening. I mean, even as we've been talking for the past like 7 minutes, I've seen a lot of people show up. A lot of folks. There was a really great museum worker happy hour that a lot of me and Lucia went to, and I see a lot of those same folks here.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
I feel like something is kind of like snowballing, people being like, we're workers. Like, I feel like, you know, why we started this podcast too, it's like hard to get art people to realize, no, we are part of the working class, and this is like an important group. I don't know if you have anything to add to like the idea that art is work, and art workers are workers, and
absolutely.
How do you feel about all the like museums that have been like either in negotiations or making new unions and stuff like that?
And so I am, so is worker initiated, and I think of there is a solidarity between museum worker and artist, because both are doing labor to better the situation when the institution themselves is remaining stagnant and perpetuating the systemic oppression. And so I think not every museum needs a union, but I think that for museums out there or museum workers who are curious about it, to really explore it, because it can happen. Because two museum unions were established this year at the New Museum, at the Tenement Museum, and that's a big deal for labor in New York City.
Yeah, and then maybe BAM. Mm-hmm.
BAM is there, and we are in support of BAM. And so MoMA, New York Historical Society, even the Bronx Museum has a union, and it's just a few people. So you don't have to think that you have to have that critical mass. You just have to have the people dedicated and solidarity among the workers.
Yeah, well, that's a great place to end. Thanks for talking to us, Megan, and we will direct people to your project in our show notes.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye. I get if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world, and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you just drive a truck. I don't care if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. Just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Lots of fun. Let's have fun.